Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Welcome to this week's edition of C'est Jules, a challenge for the intellect, a feast for the senses, with a visceral impact difficult to describe.
It's when you let all the air out of a skunk.
That's
and you stand way back.
Way back.
What new bits of information will we provide? What heretofore unknowns revealed? You have but to listen.
It's a giraffe-like insect.
When it rains, it lies down and it says, I just can't go on.
We hope to show intellectual curiosity, patience in the face of difficult questions.
Who told him he could answer? Yeah. We weren't through yet.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well,
were
you going to get there?
We were sure, eventually.
Of course.
All this and more, C'est Jules is next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. In Pakistan, a government minister is offering a bounty to anyone who kills a maker of an online video that denigrates the Islamic prophet Muhammad. As NPR's Jackie Northam reports, the offer came a day after many cities in Pakistan were engulfed in violent demonstrations over the video.
Ghulam Ahmed Bellour, a cabinet minister in charge of Pakistan's decrepit railway system, says he will give $100,000 to anyone who murders the person who made the anti-Islam film, and he extended the offer to the Taliban and Al-Qaeda to help. Bellour did not actually give a name, but it's presumed he means Nakula Baseli Nakula, a California man believed to have links to the online film. Bellour was speaking in the northwest city of Peshawar, where at least six people died and dozens were injured in Friday's violent demonstrations against the video. The federal minister acknowledged that his offer is not legal, but he said he was willing to be hanged for it. Pakistan's government has dismissed Bellour's comments. Jackie Northam, NPR News, Islamabad.
Authorities in Nepal now say at least nine climbers were swept away by an avalanche while on the world's eighth highest mountain. Officials say the dead include climbers from Europe. Police say the bodies of a German and a Nepali guide have been recovered and that rescue pilots have spotted seven other bodies. It's not clear how many members of the group survived, but at least five were injured and flown to Kathmandu. Campaign aides say Republican Mitt Romney is about to launch an intense schedule of campaign stops and pivotal states. He'll start in Colorado with a rally in Denver this evening. At a fundraiser in California this weekend, Romney said President Obama has failed to fix Washington. And running mate Congressman Paul Ryan of Wisconsin said much the same thing while campaigning in Miami's Little Havana.
We send presidents to change and fix the mess in Washington. And if this president has admitted that he can't change Washington, then you know what? We need to change presidents.
For his part, Mr. Obama has some downtime scheduled today, but he was campaigning in Wisconsin yesterday, as Chuck Kornbach reports from Wisconsin Public Radio.
The president says Republican candidate Mitt Romney wrote off half the nation when Romney said some people see themselves as victims. President Obama told a large audience in Milwaukee that he wants to see everyone do well. Milwaukeean Terrence Burkett took his son to the speech and likes the president's message.
You know, it's important to let our kids know that the future, they're included in it. Not because they are rich or where they come from, but they got an opportunity. So the president stands for that.
Republicans argue the national debt threatens the standard of living for younger people. For NPR News, I'm Chuck Kornbach in Milwaukee.
Tonight is TV's big night. The Emmy Awards are being handed out in Los Angeles, and a record could be set. Mad Men has a chance to win its fifth Best Drama Award. And you're listening to NPR News from Washington. Iran's official news agency says authorities have detained the daughter of former President Akbar Hashemi Rafsanjani. She is said to have been taken into custody this weekend to begin serving a six-month sentence on the propaganda charges she was convicted of earlier this year. CNN is defending its use of a diary belonging to the late U.S. Ambassador Chris Stevens. CNN says it found the journal belonging to Stevens 4 days after he died in the attack on the U.S. consulate in the eastern Libyan city of Benghazi. CNN says it took newsworthy tips from it and confirmed them with other sources. The State Department says CNN broke a pledge to Stevens' family that it would not report on the diary. The head of the NCAA says he's happy with Penn State's response to sanctions resulting from the Jerry Sandusky child sexual abuse scandal. The university was fined $60 million and barred from lucrative postseason bowl games for 4 years. NPR's Shep Brady reports.
National Collegiate Athletic Association President Mark Emmert spoke in Detroit Friday. He said Penn State is making progress in fixing a big problem, a football program that was so revered university administrators couldn't control it. An internal investigation found athletic and school administrators failed to protect victims of former assistant coach Jerry Sandusky. Meanwhile, Penn State has retained a prominent Washington, D.C. law firm to negotiate settlements with victims. The school hopes to finish those negotiations by the end of the year. Jeff Brady, NPR News.
The grocery store chain Trader Joe's is recalling peanut butter that's been linked to 29 cases of salmonella illnesses in 18 states. Federal health officials say the store's creamy salted Valencia peanut butter is the likely source of the outbreak. I'm Giles Snyder, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Walmart, where forever postage stamps are sold at the register 7 days a week. Walmart sells forever postage stamps.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You in San Francisco comes from the Intercontinental Hotels, the Intercontinental Mark Hopkins, and the Intercontinental San Francisco, our home away from home on the bay and on the web at intercontinentalsanfrancisco.com.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Scherr.
Thank you. Thank you. From the Ken Barr Theater at the Friends Center for the Arts in San Francisco, California, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. I've traveled all across the country with her, and it's been a first-class experience every time. Francine Akbar. I've been in the back of so many airplanes with him, I've started to call him Coach Barry Nolan. And as we've trekked northwest and southwest on our American continental wanderings, somehow we've always managed to stay united. Mr. Tony Khan. Search for corporate underwriting goes on.
Yes.
Who's the captain?
Our captain is first class tonight, Ms. Akbar.
Francine will be the captain. To my left, team two. In our travels together, we've been snowed in, rained out, held up. It never got her down. Carol and Faye Fox. In our adventures on the road together, we've been rerouted, transferred, and bumped. But she's never lost her direction. Paula Lyons. And in our 15 years of meandering, he's grumbled, he's groused, he's complained, but he's always shown up ready to play. The gamest guy I know, Mr. Arnie Reisman. Who's going to captain?
Arnie the Grouse.
Yeah. No.
Arnie the Grouse.
No jokes about Virgin Air, eh?
Thought about it, rejected it.
Yeah.
I just rejected it.
Don't go there.
Correct answers are worth 10 points, or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners, grab a pen and paper. Let's begin. Several weeks ago, we tried a round based on Tom Parker's manual, Rules of Thumb. Everyone had a good time, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yes, so let's revisit. Glean from those pages, here are a few guidelines to help you through life. Please answer the following questions with some basic rules of thumb. Carolyn?
Yes.
We've all spent time on our hands and knees with a flashlight looking for dropped contact lenses and things like that. But what rule of thumb tells us we'd be much more successful if we used the flashlight correctly?
There's a correct way to use a flashlight?
As opposed to bashing the lens over the top?
Yes, in this instance, there is.
There's a correct way to use a flashlight.
Yes. Turning it on would help.
I guarantee you'll like this.
Making sure the battery works. It does it have to do with having the correct distance between the flashlight and the area in which one is looking?
In a way, yes, it does.
Does it have something to do with aiming the light? I mean, some flashlights allow you to narrow the light and expand the
light.
Well, I
don't want to throw you off. It has a lot to do with aiming it, but it's not the narrow and the wide focus.
So are you supposed to lay it down on the floor?
You absolutely,
absolutely are.
And do what?
Because turn it on, because then you get the widest spread of light.
Do a circle.
Well, you're about seven, eight points there.
A grid search.
You are supposed to put it on the floor. Mm-hmm. Does anybody know what you do next?
Well, you dance
you
around
it. You roll it over, because what you want to do is have the lost object cast a shadow.
That is exactly right. Very good, Barry. I'm going to give those guys eight points.
Who told him he could answer? Yeah. We weren't through yet.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well...
He said I could.
Were you going to get there?
Sure, eventually.
Of course.
Yeah,
yeah.
But
that's the whole point of having a flashlight, isn't it?
Eventually, the pyramids wear down to sand.
Yeah, that's true, but we're not going there. If you use the flashlight correctly, the fastest way to find a small object that's fallen on the floor is not to shine looking directly for the object, but to look for its shadow. Roll the flashlight on the floor, and the object will be much easier to find.
Have you ever tried to find an earring back that way, though? I'm not so certain.
I think everybody here is probably going to try that from now on, so that's a basic rule of thumb.
By the
Tony, how
so,
can...
So I shouldn't try to prop up the couch with the flashlight while I
crawl
back
under it
in using my torso to... Okay.
All right, never mind.
All right.
Tony, how can we all become more prescient meteorologists by watching ants?
Well, I know that you can tell the temperature by listening to crickets.
Yes, that's true,
because
actually.
You can count the number of chirps they make per minute, multiply by 15, take a short coffee break, and then come up with a number. With ants, I would imagine their speed is affected by temperature.
Not really. It's not that much.
Would it have to do with how much they are out and about from the nest, and then when it's going to rain, they kind of go indoors?
Not really.
What kind of weather are you looking to divine?
Well, let's say rain or fair weather.
Rain. They have these tiny little
umbrellas.
You go with the umbrellas. I'm just going to...
I haven't got a clue.
Not a clue. Anybody up there that have a thought?
Well, if it rains, the ants get wet.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Yes, that's...
So, always go indoors when you see a dewy ant.
Do they vanish into their holes to avoid...
No.
Would they close the entrance to the...
Do they make a second... an escape hole for when the thing floods?
Give them 3 points just for the nuisance factor. And we'll go to the audience. Anyone in the audience know?
Do they change direction?
No. Then we're all going to learn something. When ants travel in a straight line, expect rain. When they scatter, expect fair weather.
No kidding.
Ooh, we got another roux. What do you know?
Do the ants actually know this?
I have no idea. All right. Arnie, try this one.
Sure.
I liked this one. This is interesting to find out. When flipping a coin to make a difficult choice, what rule of thumb should one employ about the outcome?
That the coin should have a tail on one side and a head on the other.
Well, that's true, but...
Well, there's a 50% chance it'll come out the way you don't want it to.
Yes, and that's to the point. Yes. So
you should pay attention to the result, because if you feel that it's not quite the result you want...
You call 2 out of 3.
Then you go with that.
You know something? She's exactly
there
right.
There you go.
10
right.
points. Very good, Carolyn. While the coin is in the air, realize what side you're hoping it's going to come down on, and then no matter where it comes, take that alternative. Go with that thought.
Your gut feeling.
Okay.
This one, I have trouble believing, but let's try it anyway, Francine. What feline rule of thumb can keep your skin moister in the house in the winter and save you money at the same time?
Feline rule of thumb.
Can keep your skin moister in the house in the winter and save you money at the same time.
Try to reduce the number of minutes you're conscious every single 24 hours to about 10 minutes.
Yeah, well, that's how the cat would treat
it. Is this
it
to do with bowls of water?
No, not bowls of water.
Like watching
evaporative
birds.
Cooling?
Evaporative cooling?
Yes.
No, not really.
Staring
to
out
do
the
with
window.
Plants.
Lie next to the window and look for birds.
Don't lie next to the window.
Absorb sun.
Lie next to the... Now, you have a house full of cats. You should know.
Air that is in motion...
Yes.
...is more effective at keeping the temperature in the air zone that you want it to be.
I don't even know what that means.
Well, if you say save money, you didn't say save money in the winter or save money in the summer.
No, in the winter. I said
oh, in the winter. All right. So,
and help you save money at the same time.
Put a nice old towel on the radiator and lie on it.
Well, no. What is it about radiators and windows? If you turn on a radiator, the heat tends to go...
Well, it's not... Any help? Give them another 3 points for nuisance factor and go to the other side. Any thoughts?
Put your favorite chair over the radiator.
Yeah.
That's right. I guess it means you can turn off the radiator if the cat's sitting on it.
Well, that's pretty close. Yeah. The basic rule of thumb is, if your cat isn't sleeping on the radiator, your house is too warm. Turn down the heat.
Right.
Richard, this helps explain a problem I've been having for the last 6 months.
Yes.
One of my cats, right after breakfast, goes right over to the radiator, sits in front of it, and stares at me.
There you go.
She wants me to turn the damn thing on.
Try this one, Paula. I found this very useful, actually. How can we all benefit from Shelley Garrity's tenant... The vanilla cap rule.
Vanilla cap, C-A-P?
Yes, the vanilla cap rule.
It always gets stuck, or they didn't put it on tightly enough and it spills. But what's the vanilla cap? What did you ask?
There is a vanilla, there's the vanilla cap rule.
A vanilla cap rule. What happens, my cooking friends, when you leave the cap?
It evaporates.
It evaporates.
Well, let me ask a question. When you use vanilla in a recipe, about how much do you use?
About a quarter of a teaspoon or a teaspoon?
Well, a capful.
That might be a help.
A capful.
So are we saying...
A capful.
Oh, a capful.
That was a pretty big hint, but that's exactly right.
That's it. So that's it. You have to keep cleaning it, otherwise you never get it.
Holds a dash.
Yep. The cap on the vanilla bottle holds approximately one teaspoon of liquid, which is what most recipes require. So basically, all you have to do is pour it into the thing and pour it right in.
Well, there you go.
That's the vanilla cap rule of thumb.
Okay, so do we get a bell for that?
No, because you got a big hint. Get 7 points for that.
Okay.
7 points for that. And finally, Barry, and this came up the other day, so I'm hoping you get this. How can you use a person's eye movements to tell whether or not they are lying?
Oh, yeah. Well, we use that all the time here.
Yeah, that's right. Say that again and look me in the eye.
How can you use a person's eye movements to tell whether or not they are lying?
Typically, if a person looks up to the left, they are making something up. If they look down to the right, they're telling the truth.
You know something? Completely backwards. For 10 points anyway.
Completely backwards.
Which explains a lot about how I raised my children.
Especially in recalling a situation, if a person's eyes move up and to the left, they're telling the truth. They're trying to remember. But if they move down and to the right, they're lying. So very
That's if you're right-handed.
That could be.
That's probably
true. We'll have to ask the left-handed people.
That's probably true.
All right, you guys, thank you so much for playing that round. I wanted to give it one more try. All thanks for taking that round. Rules of thumb. Wow. Let's go on to round two, which is played with a little musical help from the Caesar Swing Trio. It's the first of the Says You Bluffing rounds. Arnie, each of you will have a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The other have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot. Good enough to fool Francine's team. 10 points are up for grabs to Francine if she can find out who's telling the truth, and to you, Arnie, if she can't. A few seconds to come up with a definition for the word lollybanger. L-O-L-L-Y-B-A-N-G-E-R. Lollybanger. Folks?
Okay, then.
Lollybanger.
Thank you.
Jewelry stops next in Hartford, Connecticut, Friday night, October 12th, for a live performance at the University of Hartford. Then the next weekend, Saturday, October 20th, it's on to the Dairy State for some constant badgering at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. In November, we invade Syracuse, New York for our salute to the Salt City, November 16th and 17th. And finally, on December 30th, we're back in Boston to end the year, and if legend is correct, all of history, with the performance we call In the Great Mayan Bay. Tickets, information, and details are available at SaysYou.net. That's SaysYou, where if you follow that Join the Fun link, we'll show you how to join the fun. Says You returns after this from home. Says You again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at SaysYou.net. Just follow that show downloads link and find high quality copies available. That is the Irene Sazer Trio. That's Irene Sazer on the violin, Eric Pearson on the guitar, and Daniel Fabricant on the bass. Thanks, guys. Let's take a moment and thank our scorekeepers. That's Jaina Fishman from Sacramento and Mr. Ian Martin from San Ramon. Is that right? From San Ramon. Thanks for keeping the score, you guys. We have had a few moments with the word lollybanger. We will go first to Carolyn Fay Fox.
Lollybanger, a very young juvenile delinquent. Now. No. It isn't. There's a word for this, and I'm very glad there's a word for this, because a lollybanger is what you get when you blow up a balloon, then suddenly let it go, and the air comes out, and it flies around the room, and it makes that funny sound. That is a lollybanger. Thanks, Arnie.
Yeah.
Is it the sound? Oh, thank you, Arnie. Is it the sound or the balloon flying around?
It's the balloon.
The balloon flying around. That's the lollybanger. So sorry it wasn't the first definition. Can't tell you. Arnie, it could be that, or it could be yours.
Yes, it's one of my favorite all-time foods.
Ah.
It's nothing more than gingerbread with raisins.
Gingerbread?
No bananas, no whipped cream?
Yes, raisins.
Gingerbread with raisins. That's lollybanger.
What fun is that?
Okay, that could be it.
Aside of that, it's a sausage made out of suckers. I don't know.
Paula, save us from all of this. What say you?
Well, I mean, a lollybanger is nothing more than a person with an extremely bad memory. Constantly forgetful is a lollybanger.
Hey, forgetful person, Person with a bad memory, that's a lollybanger. Could be that. Could be gingerbread with raisins. Or it could be that balloon that flies around the room. It's one of those three, and the choice, Francine, is yours.
Well, what a treat. What do you think, guys?
Well, I thought it was a particularly cruel party trick. You know, a sucker that explodes.
Yes.
That is particularly cruel.
Which could give rise to the balloon theory.
The balloon does not, as we know, it does not make the sound of lolly. It's more like a gas passer, right?
Who said it had to be onomatopoeic?
I think because of the fact that the balloon is lollipop-shaped and would go about the room banging into things without harm, it may in fact be the balloon.
Yeah, that's my inclination.
What about the constantly forgetful?
What?
I'm sorry, I don't remember. Yeah.
It could be, but there's no...
Well, you know, isn't somebody who's in English, you know, he's lolly, he's a little lolly.
Lollygagger.
He's a lollygagger. Yeah. Oh, that's why she came up with lollybanger. Okay, that's a...
I didn't come up with lollybanger. Richard did.
That's right.
Let's go for the balloon. Let's just take a big chance and go for the balloon.
Well, Carolyn, they have come to the decision that a lollybanger is the balloon that flies around the room when you let it go. Is that, in fact, what it is?
Lollybanger, please bluff.
As well you did. Okay, audience, it's your turn. What do you think it is?
What?
All right, how many say the gingerbread? How many say
gingerbread?
How many say the forgetful person? Ooh, that's tough. That's pretty close. I don't really know, but someone up there was telling the truth. Who was it?
Well, it wasn't Tony by shaking his head over and over and over again, because it is nothing more than gingerbread with raisins.
That's what it is.
No
10
kidding.
Points for Arnold's thing. Let's go on to round three. A beastly category, a bear of a query. Please describe to the audience the following... Animals.
Animals.
Carolyn?
Yes.
Animals.
A skink.
A skink?
Yes.
It's like a gecko. It's a lizard.
In a way, yes, it is. It's very much like that. Any idea where it's native to? What kind of sentence was
Skinkistan.
It? Skinkistan.
When you
fine. Skinkistan. Right. 10 points. That's it.
To go along with their previous definitions, when you let all the air out of a skunk.
That's.
And you stand way back.
Way back. I'd get out of the house. Actually.
It's actually North Africa, but that's close enough, a skink. Right. It is a small North African lizard. Very good. Try this one, Tony, a night jar.
A night jar?
N-I-G-H-T-J-A-R, night jar.
It's what's left after a lion meets a lamb.
No, it's not.
A night jar. Perhaps an insect of some kind?
It is not, actually.
Really? A night jar. What other animals have lights on top of their heads?
A bat?
No, it is not a bat. That's interesting.
A night jar.
Went for the night there, didn't
you? A bird.
It is a bird.
With a sound that at night really makes you take fright. Yes?
Well, it's a bird. Any idea where it comes from, what it's all about?
I would hazard New Zealand.
No, it is not New Zealand, actually.
Okay. South America.
Not even, I'm going to give them, this is not their morning, is it?
Oh, boy, is it not.
I'm going to give you 6 points because you did get finally that it's a bird. Any help from the other side?
No,
really? Well, we, Carol.
Audience, you know, Europe, mostly. Europe. I think it's native to Europe. It's insectivorous. It's, look it up, a nightjar.
Well,
Why does it involve an insect?
Yeah.
It's the interactive portion of the show.
Yes, that's what it is. Well, this is what Says You does. We drive people to reference material. This is our mission in life.
Yet it's from Europe, yet it has an English name.
Yes, a nutjar.
Okay.
And there you go. Arnie,
yeah.
What might this animal be? A cusk.
Oh, it's a fish.
C-U-S-K?
Yeah,
fish. It's a... Now, what kind of fish?
It's like a cod. Like,
you know something? That's exactly how it's described in the dictionary. That's exactly right.
Okay.
Ooh. It's a large Atlantic fish, and it's pretty big. It's bigger than you would think. A large Atlantic fish, like the cod, is a cusk. Very good. Yeah. Try this one, Francine, a vicuna.
Oh.
It's a furry animal that makes a nice soft
coat.
Well,
it
hair is sort of like a soft cashmere kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd call it furry.
No. It's more of a very soft, like pashmina.
Yeah. Yeah, and do you have any idea where it's from?
It is an animal high in the mountains of South America.
That's exactly right. Very good. It is a...
Not that they... Yeah. I didn't hear an animal description, actually.
When I think of a vicuna, I think of fleece. I think of like a fleecy kind of
alpaca
thing.
Alpaca.
It comes from a very close, rich friend.
Do they still make coats from vicuna?
Yes, of course they do.
Really?
It's often a blend.
I would have thought that would have...
If you travel to South America, they sell lots of things made of vicuna.
I suppose.
And yeah, once they've, exhausted the hides of the Naugas.
The Naugas, right. You very seldom see a Nauga
anymore.
Yeah,
you don't see, naked Nauga is really a shame.
It's just, right. They shear the Naugas, don't they?
They do,
shear the Naugas and then there's... How many of you are actually old enough to remember the Nauga? Oh, try this one, Paula. These last two are hard, but give it a shot. A grivet. G-R-I-V-E-T. Grivet.
A grivet.
Paula and Barry always get the hard ones.
I don't know. Is it a monkey?
Oh, my goodness. It is exactly a monkey. Can you describe it at all?
I cannot describe
it
at all.
Not a bit.
Oh,
no.
It has a tail.
It has a tail.
It has a tail.
And it has an agent.
And it has an agent, that's true.
Who got him into this program.
It's your agent, as a matter of fact.
That's right.
The same.
So is this a small one? Is this a little guy?
Yeah, no, it's a mid-size.
A mid-size.
Is it a four-door?
It's a comfortable kind of monkey.
It's a mid-size four-door monkey.
Comfortable monkey.
Right.
But it's tufted. That's what makes it unusual. It is white and olive-tufted African monkey. It's a grivet, and I know if you've ever seen them, you will recognize
them. Yes, I like my grivets tufted.
Right.
And finally, what kind of creature, Barry, would a poor beagle be? P-O-R-B-E-A-G-L-E, poor beagle.
Like a pill of garlic.
If you wanted really good barbecue, that would fetch.
And yap.
Right.
You would look for the poor beagle. Because that sandwich can hunt.
Yeah.
A poor beagle is it's a mammal.
It is not even close to a mammal. No, not even... Wouldn't even come into contact with a mammal.
The bivalve poor beagle.
Yeah, the bivalve poor beagle. They get the, I always go from the easiest to the hardest, and Barry always gets walloped with the hard one. So
the poor beagle is not a bird.
Maybe it's a reptile.
Well, I think we've gone through most of the group.
We have some phylums left.
Yeah, we haven't gone back to insects.
We've done birds.
It's a giraffe-like insect.
Given to clustering.
Given to, yes. That grows in colonies. I give up.
Maybe it's a crustacean.
Give him 3 points for the when it, giraffe-like insect.
When it,
when it rains, it lies down and it says, I just can't go on.
Anybody on the other side have any idea? Anyone in the audience? No.
How about an amphibian? We haven't had that yet.
No, it's a shark with a pointed snout.
A shark
with a pointed snout is a poor beagle, and I hope I pronounced it correctly.
Don't all sharks have pointed something?
I'm just going to give this. I'm going to throw this one out. This is a bonus question. 10 points.
Okay.
Anybody can answer it. What might a phenicopter be?
Phenicopter?
Yeah, phenicopter? Phenicopter.
Non-fat dairy creamer with opposable thumbs.
Phenicopter.
Yeah. That's an insect.
It flies.
You would think so.
It flies.
It's not an insect. It does fly.
It rises out of the ashes and flies away.
It's a specific kind of bird that looks sort of like a helicopter.
Well, because it has a
feathery thing like that on its...
Also known as Air Force Four. It's the one that lifted Nixon off at the end of his presidency.
No, that's not it at all. That's not it at all. A phenicopter, I just have to tell you, this is a flamingo.
No kidding.
Really? Yeah. Oh. Ooh, we got another.
No kidding.
I have no idea. A
phenicopter. Where is it a flamingo? I just...
Pink phenicopters.
Let's go on to round four, which is Francine's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word, two will bluff 10 points, Arnie, if your team can find the rose amid thorns. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word Stalko. S-T-A-L-K-O. Stalko. Folks?
You're nobody till somebody cares. You know you may be a king, you may possess the world and its gold, but gold won't buy you happiness. When you're growing old, you know the world still is the same. You'll never change it. Just as sure as the stars shine above, you're nobody till somebody loves you. So find yourself somebody to love.
Just a quick reminder, Says You performs live this fall on Friday, October 12th in Hartford, Connecticut. On Saturday, October 20th, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. November 16th and 17th in Syracuse, New York. And December 30th at Regis College in Weston, Massachusetts. Tickets, information, and details for all Says You performances are available at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. And we hope you can join us this fall for a live performance of Says You. Briefly, Says You pauses. We'll be right back. Says You coming to our town? Where can I find old shows? Who played that music I heard last week? So many questions, all answered on our website at saysyou.net. There you can find tickets to tapings, Dally on the Daily Dispatch, or access our complete archive. You can contribute a question to the show and absorb ridicule on a national scale. This and more at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. That is the Caesar Swing Trio. You can find out more about any of the groups that play on our show by going to our website, go to the Frequently Asked Questions page, find out who played that music I heard last week, and I hope you will do so. We have had a few moments with the word Stalko. We will go first to Tony Khan.
Stalko is a nickname that Bulganin once and only once used on Stalin.
Stalin.
And I believe that was the last thing he ever did.
Yeah. Yo, Stalko.
The name for a headless member of the Central Committee. No, it's not. Stalko is a poor man posing as a rich man.
A poor man posing as a rich man.
Yeah, like in a confidence operation.
Oh, I see. That's the Stalko.
Yeah.
Okay. Could be it. Sounds plausible. Francine, what's your take?
Well, a Stalko is something that a very sophisticated horticulturalist would have in his or her toolkit. And it is a tool used in sculpting topiary.
Oh, my God. So that bluff didn't work.
Yeah.
How do you know?
Well, I'm going to repeat it anyway. I don't care. It's a tool used in sculpting topiary. That's the old, you drag out the Stalko and snip away. Hey, I've heard worse, believe me.
That's the Snipco.
Now available from
And if
from
you
Mobile.
Order now...
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah.
We'll Call throw in a Stalko.
Right.
A full range of Stalkos.
Barry, I'm sure you have an interesting angle on this.
Well, I know Francine was bluffing because I have the real definition.
There you go.
A Stalko is a non-poisonous mushroom. If you read the business section enough, you probably are aware that the original name before the focus testing of Subway was Steak and Stalko. They thought bringing poison into the idea was just not a winner.
So Subway turned down Steak and Stalko and went with Subway instead because it's a non-poisonous mushroom. That's what Stalko is. It's either that tool used in sculpting topiary, or a poor man posing as a rich man, probably in a confidence scheme.
Poor man posing as a non-poisonous mushroom.
Yes, possible. Altogether
but in
possible.
Fact, he's really a topiary.
It's one of those three, and it's your go, Ernie.
I thought it was a creep who won't stop following you, but I was pronouncing it differently, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Tony's one-man version of Fiddler on the Roof is beginning to sound pretty good to me right now. A rich man who's a poor man, or a poor man who's a rich man. Well, I forgot what it was now.
Poor man posing as a rich man.
Yes. In a kind of like in a confidence game.
Because I can't think of tools related to topiary, and I don't believe.
Well, there must be some.
And all poisons.
It didn't grow that way by itself.
You know.
You mean
they're not planted by poodles?
Oh,
That's great.
How about we just cut to the chase?
I'm going with poor man posing as rich.
Yeah, yes. We're going to vote for Tony.
Good. All right.
Boy, I think that's a unanimous vote over there.
Woohoo!
Tony, they all say that a Stalko is a poor man posing as a rich man. Is that
sounds
in
like
fact
it should be, if it isn't.
What it is?
Well, normally at this point I would read something on my card, but given the score, I think I'm going to fall on the scorekeeper.
Yes, I understand.
It's a route.
My father was a Stalko.
Poor man posing as a rich man.
There's what it is.
Good work. It's a good word.
This week's suggestion for a spotlight round comes from Nick Williams of Canton, Ohio. Nick writes, "Back in the 1990s, I was a student in Boston. One Sunday, my new girlfriend dragged me to a barn outside of town to see her favorite radio show being taped. That was my introduction to the Says You gang and my future wife. The round I remember from that day was one that asked the difference between roadsters and convertibles, things like that. Penny and I still listen each week. Can you help us reminisce? We can, Nick. Lenore Shannon joined the panel that day for a classic round of What's the Difference? Carolyn, what's the difference between a roadster and a convertible?
The difference between a roadster and a convertible.
I believe a roadster, Carolyn, is a two-seater.
You know,
it's just a little sports car, two-seater
probably.
Like that.
Yes.
In large part there. Yeah.
But I never saw a top anywhere on a roadster.
I think they do have a top, but you can retract it like a convertible. But I think Paul is right in saying there are two. A roadster is cute.
No, you know what it is? I'm going to give you the...
It's cute.
It's cute.
And a convertible is just a piece of junk, you know?
No, I'm going to give you the 10 points. Actually, the difference is the top. A convertible top folds into a compartment. Roadster tops are stored elsewhere. Tony, what's the difference between burlesque and parody?
About $40 a seat.
Where are you going from there?
Well, let's see, you know. See, burlesque, it's hard to tell the boys from the girls. And in, and in parody, that's the whole point. Then again, parody is making fun of a particular institution or a particular way of life, and burlesque is it's a lighter form of entertainment.
It is a lighter form of entertainment.
Parody uses the form of something to make fun of that thing. Burlesque is an exaggerated form of performance, style of performance, which could be making fun of anything.
So it's the difference between dressing down and dressing up.
Very good. No. 10 points. A parody makes fun of stylistic peculiarities of a work and must therefore closely imitate. Burlesque ridicules by grotesque exaggeration. In short, parody ridicules form, burlesque ridicules substance. Very good. Arnie, what's the difference between Mercadian and Fuller projections?
You scientist, you.
Mercadian.
What's the difference between Mercadian projection and Fuller projection? Ooh, there's rumblings in the audience. I like this.
Rumblings. Because we all just ate. I mean.
Let's see. That looks like a blank slate over there.
It's pretty blank.
Mercadian projection and Fuller projection, no help?
Nope.
They're projected onto
a
blank slate.
But we know Barry will know.
Yeah. Yes. Let's go to the other side.
Let's go to Barry.
Both of these are attempts to come to grips with the problem that you get when you try and take a sphere and unfold it and have it be flat and show how big different countries are.
That's right.
One of those takes the globe and cuts it in an odd way so that it would fold out flat, but the other takes a nice flat piece of paper and exaggerates the flat size of some countries like Greenland.
He's painfully right about this,
wow.
You know. The big Greenland is Mercadian projection,
okay.
And that is because a Mercadian map depicts true relevant location of countries and areas because the latitude and longitude grids are perpendicular and equal in size. Fuller projection depicts the true size of countries in block form and is therefore very angular and blockish.
Kate Smith is the Mercadian projection of Madonna.
Does that have to be edited out? Ooh, a split vote from the audience. Not a good sign for that stand. Lenore, what's the difference between an old codger and an old fogey? That's a good
Barry is an old fogey and Tony is an old codger.
Yeah, that's very good. 10 points, very good, yes. Couldn't have said it better myself. Very good.
One is somebody who's simply old, the other is somebody who does things the old-fashioned way.
That is exactly right. So they are well justified 10 points.
Oh, so the codger is old.
So what? Who is what?
Who is what? Yeah.
An old fogey does things the old-fashioned way. An old codger is somebody who's simply old.
Yes, that's it. Well, let's just say mildly eccentric or disreputable.
Okay.
That would be better.
How do you do with it?
So did we get that?
Yeah. Paula, what's the difference between a cynic and a skeptic?
Two fogies.
Two fogies. Yes, two fogies.
A cynic is doubtful of everything. A skeptic is doubtful of some things, I think. A skeptic, when presented with evidence that doesn't seem to ring true, will doubt it. But a cynic doubts just about everything.
You know,
there's that saying about a cynic, someone who knows the price of everything and the value of nothing.
Yeah.
Whereas a skeptic, I mean, there's such a thing as healthy skepticism, where you look at something and you're willing to assess it and perhaps change your mind.
One is reasonably positive and the other is more negative.
One comes from Missouri and the other one lives in Washington.
You're all right there. Let me just say what the dictionary says. A skeptic is a philosopher, one who thinks that all knowledge is uncertain. He therefore carries a critical and incredulous attitude. A cynic is a social critic, a misanthrope who believes that man lives only for self-interest. So basically, a cynic's a lot grumpier.
Yeah. Well, that's what...
10 points. Very good.
Roger.
And finally, Barry, what is the difference between freedom and liberty?
I would think freedom is the license to make choices, and liberty is more of a political directing your own fortunes and
you know,
voting.
You're a long way there. Just even the introduction of the word government does add...
Liberty is like a right, isn't it? Freedom is a state of being free to exercise
that
right.
You don't have life freedom.
Well, for instance, you have freedom of speech, you don't have liberty of speech.
Right.
The difference is, freedom is the essential quality of unrestricted behavior. It's just, that's what it is, unrestricted behavior. Liberty is the granted permission that allows freedom. Liberty is bestowed, freedom is... can't be given.
Yes.
Very good. That's our spotlight round for this week. If there's a memorable moment you haven't heard in years, let us know. We'll send our crack staff into the archives and do our best to find your favorite. You can register your choice at SaysYou.net. That's SaysYou. That's our look back. Now, back to the present. Let's close with a San Francisco round of Says Who.
Ooh.
For 10 points, please tell me who uttered the following felicitous statements about the city by the bay.
Oh.
Ooh. And who? And I haven't even asked the question yet.
Ooh.
All right, Carolyn, okay. Once and for all, who said the coldest winter I ever saw was the summer I spent in San Francisco?
Oh, my gosh.
Jeez.
Was that Mark Twain?
Yes, it was. Hey, we got it done.
All right.
I want to tell you, I was sitting in an outdoor restaurant yesterday at 5 o'clock at night. It was 60 degrees. By 6:30, it was absolute zero. I think you got to get used to it. I don't know. Tony, try this one.
H.L. Mencken.
10 points. Now, tell me what he said, wise guy.
Well, in a way, what he said was, why not give him 10 points for heaven's sake?
This American curmudgeon's love for this city just came out when he wrote, what fetched me instantly and thousands of other newcomers with me was the subtle but unmistakable sense of escape from the United States.
And you can tell by the spare language and the careful choice of only a few words.
Yes.
That it was H.L. Mencken.
It was H.L. Mencken.
Wow.
It was. Can't believe that one. All right, try this one, Arnie.
I'm biting my tongue.
Recalling his San Francisco youth, he lamented, you look back and you see how hard you worked and how poor you were and how desperately anxious you were to succeed. And all you can remember is how happy you were.
Ooh, Jack London?
Boy, they're on the beam today. Great. Absolutely on the beam. All right, try this one, Francine. What ebullient epicure waxed ecstatically about San Francisco? You couldn't be anywhere else. It's so beautiful, and there's that location and the sense of free spirit. Who couldn't become ravenous in such a place?
What's her name? Who just...
Her?
Yeah, her.
That's...
Ruth Reichel.
No. Actually, no.
Diamond Jim Brady.
No.
Who would not be ravenous? An epicure. That sounds really like something Ruth Reichel would have said.
But it's possible, but she didn't.
Julia.
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 It's exactly
right.
I'm going to assume we all know who Julia
Julia
is.
Julia Child.
Julia Child is exactly right. Who couldn't become ravenous in such a place? Try this one, Paula. This English wit claimed of a club in town, "I never saw so many well-dressed, well-fed, business-looking bohemians in my whole life."
That's not Oscar Wilde.
Oscar Wilde?
No, of course it's Oscar Wilde.
Yeah. It sure sounds like
just going to be your day over there. And Barry, I saved the hardest one for you, as I always do. So sorry. This citizen of the empire was in Vermont when he wrote of San Francisco, "It has one drawback. 'Tis hard to leave."
Citizen of the empire. British.
Oh, how about Charles Dickens?
Charles Dickens. Dickens.
Dickens, yeah.
No. Oh, just a minute. Say it again.
Oh, Tally. No.
No.
Starts with a T, though, right?
No, not at all.
No.
Was he British or French?
One
we
at a time,
did a show
boys.
In Brattleboro, Vermont, and that's how we know you should know this.
Brattleboro, Vermont, and he's talking about how hard it is to leave San Francisco.
Oh, yeah. He was in Brattleboro, Vermont when he wrote this.
Oh. There you go, Francine. Take it.
He did the hard work.
Not an author. We tried Charles Dickens before.
No. I don't think you're going to... Any help from the other side?
No, but I know we're going to recognize it when we hear it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Anyone
just
in the audience? Kipling.
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 Oh,
Kipling.
Yeah,
Kipling. I would never have gotten it.
Kipling was the one who did it.
Yes.
It's a tough beat on the last one, but it didn't matter. Not on a day when Arnie's team was going to score 105 points. Winners this week, Arnie Risman's team.
What can we say?
That is. That is all we have time for this week.
Luckily for us.
Believe me, that's all we have time for. Thanks so much to Lenore Naxon, Geese Graphics, and all the folks here at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Also to Joanne Wallace, Robin Smith, and the good folks at KQED FM here in the city. There you go. Richard Scher and Philip Salkind are the writers, although they'll deny it tonight. Antonio Oliart mans the meters, and Zach Moore is our associate producer and webmaster. Our closing thought, Mark Twain also once said of this city, "I've always been better treated here than I deserved." So have we, Mr. Clemens, and we thank you all for the hospitality. See you next week. Support for Seju in San Francisco comes from the Intercontinental Hotels, the Intercontinental Mark Hopkins, and the Intercontinental San Francisco, our home away from home on the bay and on the web at intercontinentalsanfrancisco.com. Benjamin, give him the skinny.
Says you. Created and produced by Pippin and Finch. Busted.
Support for this program comes from Nashville Public Radio listener members. Make a pledge of support for the programming you value on WPLN, and you could win an 8-day tour for two of England and Scotland. Our fall e-pledge drawing will be held September 28th. Pledge now at WPLN.org.
Celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 10 o'clock.